Welcome, everyone. My name is Kellen Wagner-Ramsdell, and I am the director of Arete's Threat Intelligence Team. Today, I'm joined by my lead threat intelligence consultant, Trenton Howard, and the threat intelligence consultant, Daniel Cronin. The threat intelligence team at Arete is responsible for performing attribution on every ransomware and extortion engagement Arete works. This means we are the team responsible for looking at all aspects of adversaries in cyberspace to understand their operations and learn about what they're doing so we can help victims defend themselves and respond better. In today's podcast, we'll be focused on 2025 May stats and data. We will see which threat actors were the most active in May and how their use of various tools, exploits, and malware enabled their attacks against victims. We will dive deep into some of the top and emerging groups and understand the upcoming risks to victims. With that, I'll turn to the team.
I think the thing that captured May was that we had the highest number of distinct named threat actors. Interlock and Play were our top threat actors in May, but not really by a whole lot. Combined, they were less than a quarter of all activity. And we just had a lot of newer, smaller threat actors that we just either don't see a whole lot or they're just new. So on new ones, we had Crypto 24. They've popped up. Black Nevis was another one. Skira Team. And then some kind of newish ones. Termite, World Leaks, SafePay, Nitrogen pop back up again. So we just had a weird mix of threat actors in the month of May.
Black Nevis was an interesting on the new group side because they weren't really new to us. And it fits this trend that we've seen of threat groups when they first establish their operations. They maybe don't quite have nailed down their naming and their branding because we'd actually seen that group more than a year ago when they were trialing out the name Black for Over. And it looks like they abandoned that. Now they've established their operations as Black Nevis. So it was really interesting to see that yes, it was newer groups, smaller operations that aren't as prolific as a lot of the traditional big names we're used to seeing, but they've just been slowly standing up their operations as they now make a play to have an impact in the threat ecosystem.
I always wonder how expensive it is to start a ransomware group, because you'll see a lot of them, you know, start off with using leaked builders and maybe haven't spent as much time in the design department and whatever else it may be. And then after whatever amount of time or income or whatever that may be, they switch to, you know, having their own proprietary encryptor, maybe advertising more as a ransomware as a service operation. But a lot of times there will be that gap in operations there, whether it's a couple months or in Black Nevis, you know, a year or so. It is always interesting to me to see the evolution of that when looking at new groups popping up, advancing their sophistication down the line.
With those new groups, though, I think to your point there, Trenton, we definitely also see that some of them are really unpredictable in terms of they're having to figure out how to do their attack even. And that shows up in their decryptors sometimes where they maybe aren't as effective or they have issues that requires troubleshooting because they just, not to give these bigger or more traditional threat actors too much credit, but these newer groups sometimes just don't quite know what they're doing. And it shows in the impacts that maybe are more extreme in the victim environment than the threat actor even intended. So it can be really, really challenging from the response perspective.
We've seen that with some of the groups that became the larger groups. Akira, when it comes to mind, their decryption was janky when they first formed. But over time, they refined it and it became less problematic as the group got more prolific and got bigger.
But then Akira was not really seen this month.
Yeah, our normal groups, Akira, Kwilin, Play did come up, but they were quiet this month. Ransom Hub, which we haven't talked about on one of these podcasts yet, but we've written about it. Their infrastructure has been down since early April. So they haven't been a factor in April or May.
What's interesting to me about this is, you know, kind of looking back at April and May, we'll get into it later. There were law enforcement actions taken in May, but really all this craziness started before that. And so this is kind of the first time that I have seen the cybercrime ecosystem disrupted so much without the involvement of law enforcement. The only other thing I can think of is like Alf Black Cat, you know, doing their exit scam, maybe some other things. But it's really interesting to see Ransom Hub disappearing all of the Dragonforce shenanigans that have been going on with doing DLS defacements and co-branding logos with dark web forums and making big claims. And what we're seeing is, you know, just small and new groups popping up everywhere and then an overall decline. Usually, again, when I think of declines in ransomware and new groups popping up, it's because law enforcement took down Lockbit or something along those lines that you can say and point to, ah, yes, that's the reason. But there's no like smoking gun that I'm seeing of, you know, 100% why we're seeing this.
Also with Trent, what you're saying too, we've also had those leaks that have come up in the past month or two. Well, actually a little bit longer, but Black Vasta had the public leaks and they seem to have fizzled out a bit since that came to light. And then in May, Lockbit, the group that just won't go away, had yet another leaked information on their end as well. So yeah, it's been an interesting month of May, to say the least.
Kind of with that interesting note, law enforcement started a new season of Operation Endgame, continued disruption moving into, you know, May and June. What initially it started as an indictment against the owner operator of Quackbot or Qbot is now kind of moved into some of the takedown stuff that we saw last season of Operation Endgame, where they were targeting the support that ransomware groups have. So far they've taken down 300 servers, 650 domains, new malware variants, and, you know, curious to see where this goes for the rest of the quote unquote season that law enforcement has planned from Operation Endgame.
If anyone listening to this hasn't seen it, just Google Operation Endgame, and they got them a bunch of artists and graphic designers, and some of those episodes are a trip. They definitely went in on the creative department with the Operation Endgame.
Whoever made them, they like your video game, Dan.
What is it? One definitely had a Fallout throwback. I was happy with that one.
They're a good watch, and we've seen, I mean, season one, because they're really playing into that media theme there. But season one of Operation Endgame, we saw really successful at forcing threat actors to use new tools, new ways of gaining their initial access and breaking in. And so this latest round of Operation Endgame, we saw a lot of server disruption. I don't think we've seen a lot of the follow-on kind of disruption to threat actors. What we have seen this time, which was tied to a different activity, was Microsoft's Digital Crimes Unit collaborating with international law enforcement to disrupt LumaStealer. And LumaStealer is really one of those things that we saw threat actors turn to after season one of Operation Endgame. Sits in the browser, it's very hard to detect, and it steals credentials. And we saw that have such a huge presence in our client environments prior to intrusion. It was great for about a day to see Microsoft's action with law enforcement against LumaStealer, but then we rapidly saw them reconstitute operations, which was kind of sad to see. But it's good to see law enforcement disrupt that initial infrastructure.
And a note on the LumaStealer activity is, with the disruptions, any stolen credentials are still there. So if those credentials haven't been changed, the activity isn't changing that.
No, absolutely. Credential reuse and not rotating passwords, it still is feeding so much of the threat actor landscape. Credentials are just so useful right now because, from what we're seeing, threat actors are learning from law enforcement operations. They know these servers and these command and control, it's going to be disrupted. Credentials last. They've got a staying power. We don't have rotation. We don't have complexity requirements in some places. And threat actors are really benefiting from that and absolutely password reuse.
Something else interesting that happened in May was the Coinbase data breach. And what I thought was interesting about it is threat actors were able to exfiltrate data associated with the users and then use that information to then conduct social engineering against them, all while at the same time extorting Coinbase with the $20 million ransom. They had the potential avenue of Coinbase paying the ransom while they were also making money from a fraudulent activity against the users, tricking them into transferring their cryptocurrency. And what I think is really interesting is most of the crypto exchanges that I see be affected by something like this, it's more of the Bybit one that happened earlier this year, where they were siphoning off funds directly from the exchange. So it's interesting to see kind of the dual pronged approach of being able to gain that user information to conduct social engineering attacks against the specific users, and then also having a ransom against the actual entity itself to open up additional pathways of opportunity for, you know, profiting off of their bad guy, nefarious stuff. So
as weird as May was, social engineering is really standing out as the dominant tactic, I'd say, against victims. Because even on the ransomware and extortion side, we've seen threat actors move back to a lot of the traditional social engineering. They're pretending to be help desks. They're spamming users and getting users to just open the door into the enterprise. And it's so, so successful. And with Coinbase, the threat actors were just able to find enough to convince the users that, hey, we're your trusted party. And it just reduces that exposure for the threat actors and appears to increase the gains a lot. So no surprise that they're moving to it. But I'd say in the weirdness of May, social engineering dominance was really the only consistent piece we saw.
Absolutely. And all types of like cryptocurrency, wire fraud, all of these fraudulent activities. Like I know there was one individual in from open source, but there was one individual that kind of outlined what happened to him. And basically they got a call from someone impersonating Coinbase and said, hey, we've had a breach. Please transfer your funds to this wallet for safekeeping, basically. And they just, you know, transferred their funds to the wallet and, you know, lost, I think it was like $1 million.
Thank you for joining us this month as we discuss stats from May. If you found today's episode valuable, hit the follow button on Spotify to catch new episodes packed with expert insights and actionable advice. For more on Arete's solutions and our mission to create a world free from cyber extortion, visit us at areteir.com. If you'd like to connect or have questions, contact our marketing team at marketing@areteir.com. For immediate support with an active cyber incident, please contact us at Arete911@areteir.com. Arete's Q1 2025 Crimeware Report will be releasing in mid-June. Please check our show notes for more information. Until next time, stay safe and secure.